Captain's lap.
Julian!
Cooper shouted.
Please tell me you're ready to go!
We're all set! Julian shouted back. Hop in! Cooper swung his axe down and caught a soldier ant in the head with the flat of his axe on the upswing. 6 feet of ant backflipped into the air, leaving the workers under its command without instruction. Tim's worries about the captain's lap proved to be unfounded. Cooper chose to sit on the floor of the wagon with his feet hanging off the back.
Go!
He shouted. Go, horse! Julian commanded, and the wagon lurched forward. Cooper turned his head toward Dave. He didn't even need to look up. He raised an empty clawed hand.
Crossbow!
Dave kicked around some of the spilled equipment from the canvas sack until he found two crossbows. He handed one to Cooper and loaded a bolt into the one he kept for himself. No one objected when Captain Righteous grabbed a bow for himself, but Cooper paused long enough to give him a look with his enraged, swollen red eyes that expressed in no uncertain terms what the penalty would be for turning said bow on anyone inside the wagon. The three of them fended off the ants until the wagon got up to a speed that the ants were unable to keep up with.
I'll be having that back now,
said Cooper, when they were safely far away enough from the ants. His rage had subsided, but Captain Righteous was still in no position to argue. He handed Cooper the crossbow. Cooper tossed it over his shoulder into the pile of miscellaneous equipment. It landed on something with a clank that made the captain turn his head. From beneath the canvas shone the corner of something large and flat.
Is that my shield? Asked Captain Righteous.
Huh?
Said Cooper. He craned his neck around to look behind him.
Oh, yeah. I picked it up when you fell asleep.
The captain's face brightened for the first time since any of the party had met the man.
Thank the gods!
You can owe me one,
said Cooper.
What is that sticking out from under it? What sort of provisions do you people travel with?
Asked Captain Righteous. He reached down, but Dave kicked at his hand.
Hey, said Dave. Mind your hands. No one gave you permission to root around in our shit.
What is that?
Ant leg,
said Cooper, grabbing it for himself.
God, I'm starving.
He took a bite.
Oh my God, it's fucking heavenly.
Really?
Asked Tim.
Try it,
said Cooper. He passed the leg back to Tim. It was still warm. Tim took a bite from the fleshy end at the top, where the leg had once connected to the ant's body. The taste wasn't entirely unlike that of boiled crawfish, but the texture was off. Ant meat was a lot chewier. Though they hadn't prepared it with any seasoning, it had a natural spiciness to it.
Shit, he's right! Who knew ant tasted this good?
Cooper grabbed his second ant leg, stood up and bit off another chunk of meat. He shouted out to the few remaining ants he could still see.
Thanks for the meal, fuckers!
The rest of the group devoured the ant meat and passed some of it along to Catherine and Julian. Tim wondered, if he ever got home and was able to bring some giant ants with him, if they could be farmed, this meat would bring in a whole lot more customers than the chicken hut was bringing in. The only person who didn't seem to be enjoying the feast was Captain Righteous.
You know, of course, said the captain, that the ants who just attacked us were following the scent of their fallen comrade.
No shit,
said Dave through a mouthful of ant.
That's good information to know for the future.
Still, said Tim, I think it was worth it for this meat.
Cooper let out a huge belch directed at Captain Righteous.
You, sir, are a truly disgusting...
The captain paused. His face became pale and gravely serious. Those of the group who had been laughing now stopped and followed his gaze down to the floor of the wagon, where a severed head looked back up at them.
You are all animals, said the captain. And when I take back my sword that you have stolen from me, I will slaughter you all like the rabid beasts that you are.
Yes, said Tim in his most businesslike tone of voice. But until then, do you think you'd be open to at least listening to an explanation?
Plead for your lives if you like, cowering worms. It will make no difference. I will personally make sure that each of your heads rolls around on the floor of some cart.
Okay, good, said Tim. Hey, Chaz, you're a bard. You've probably got the highest charisma score of any of us. Maybe you should take this one.
Chaz started.
Me? Take what?
Just explain about the head.
That shit all happened before I got here, said Chaz. I've got no more idea than him why you guys are traveling around with a dude's head in your bag.
Oh, yeah,
Tim thought for a moment. He wasn't going to be able to sell this story. Not on this guy. Not unless Mordred started talking through the head in his presence, and there didn't seem much chance of Mordred being cooperative. He decided to go with an entirely different approach.
"We outnumber you 8-1, he continued. "We are armed, you are not. We've had many opportunities to kill you, and yet here you sit among us. We could kill you right now, but we don't. We aren't murderers."
"And yet my comrade's head rolls around on the floor of your stolen wagon."
"There's an explanation for that."
"Oh, I'm sure it's a good one."
"It's a long story."
"It's a long ride to Cardinia," said the captain. "Please feel free to pass the time entertaining me with your lies."
"Cardinia?" asked Tim. "Is that where we're going?" The captain eyed Tim suspiciously.
"Unless you know of a different city that this road leads to."
Dave spoke up.
"What kind of place is Cardinia?"
"What?"
asked the captain. He looked around as if waiting for a punchline, but everyone continued to stare back at him expectantly.
"How is it that you don't know of Cardinia?"
"We're not from around here," said Tim.
"I was informed that you were traveling from that direction when you attacked."
He looked down at the head on the floor.
"Put that in a bag, would you, Cooper?" said Tim.
"Oh, right,"
said Cooper. He put the head in his bag.
"Sorry about that. Go on."
Captain Righteous stared at the half-orc in confused disgust.
"So it's a big city then, is it?"
asked Tim, hoping to bring the captain's attention back to him.
"Huh?"
said the captain, turning back to Tim.
"Oh, yes. Is it a big city? It's only the second biggest city in the entire realm."
He looked around in astonishment at all the faces looking back at him, obviously thirsty for information that should be common knowledge.
"How is it that none of you have heard of Cardinia? Her port serves as a trading hub for ships from all over Dalgar."
"And Dalgar," Tim continued. "I'm sorry. This is going to sound like a stupid question, but since you already don't have a very high opinion of us, what the hell? Is Dalgar the name of this realm, or is it..."
"Dalgar's the name of the world,"
exclaimed the captain.
"Where are you people from?"
"Not from Dalgar,"
said Cooper.
"Our planet is called Earth," said Tim.
"Your planet?" said the captain. "There isn't a planet in the heavens called Earth. Do you mean to say you descended here from the stars? You're all mad."
"Yeah," said Tim. "I figured you'd think that. So, anyway, if this Cardinia is a worldwide trading port, it should be pretty big. Maybe we can find some information there."
"Information about what?"
asked Chaz.
"About getting home."
"Mordred was pretty clear about that not being a possibility," said Dave. "But he said there are dozens of other people he sent here. We might run into some of them."
"I'll settle for finding some booze and smokes first,"
said Cooper.
"This town ought to have some decent taverns."
"All you're going to find in Cardinia," said the captain, "is a swift end to your worthless lives."
There followed an uncomfortable silence. Tim cleared his throat.
"So, how long a ride is it to Cardinia?"
Captain Righteous sighed.
"At this pace, we should be there before nightfall."
Chapter 20. Every second of the next hour and a half passed by at a snail's pace for Dave. The sun glared down on them, and without the protection of the canvas cover, most of the party succumbed to exhaustion. The relative safety of the moment made for a good time to take a nap. Even Catherine looked to be having trouble keeping her eyes open atop her horse. Julian may or may not have been in one of his elf trances. It was hard to tell from behind him, and while he was wearing that ridiculous sombrero. Tim was sprawled out on the floor of the wagon just below Dave's feet. He looked peaceful. In fact, everyone seemed to either be dozing or well on their way to it. Everyone, that is, except for himself and Captain Righteous. Dave chanced a glance at him and was met with the captain's steely stare. Dave turned away. Whatever sense of peace and security everyone else was feeling, Dave didn't feel at all. Sure, they were now well beyond the reach of the ants, and that was good. And yeah, Captain Righteous was unarmed and technically their prisoner, but that was of small comfort. Dave could see in the captain's eyes that he was forming a plan, waiting for an opportunity to present itself. And even if no such opportunity arose, Then what? What were they going to do with him? Just send him on his way in this new city? He'd be rearmed and up their asses again in no time. Every now and again, they would pass a cart or wagon headed in the opposite direction, presumably on its way to Algor. Upon seeing the state of the party's wagon and the unlikely combination of races riding in it, most of them would give it a wide berth and hurry their horses along without so much as a friendly wave on the way past. Dave leaned back and tried to formulate some sort of plan in his mind for what their next move should be. Most of all, he thought about how they were going to get back home. Mordred couldn't really be planning to keep them here indefinitely. And what about the police? 6 people just went missing. Surely there would be an investigation. They'd find Mordred's tire tracks, DNA, phone records. Dave slumped forward, cradling his bearded face in his meaty hands. No, they'll probably just walk into the chicken hut, see the role-playing books and dice, and write us all off as having made a suicide pact or something.
What the?
Shouted Julian. Dave looked up, but saw only a sombrero floating down like a leaf where Julian should have been.
Gah! Shit!
Julian continued, but his voice was coming from below the wagon this time.
What?
Catherine said, trying to shake the sleepiness out of her head.
Who?
She looked over to see Julian missing.
Ah!
She screamed, and then fell out of sight. The wagon rolled to a stop, but not before rolling over both of them. Dave stood up and looked ahead. The horses were both gone, as if they'd never been there to begin with. He turned around. Julian lay face down on the ground about 20 yards back, and Catherine sat up and rubbed the back of her head. Tim sat up.
What happened? Why have we stopped? What's going on?
Dave had no satisfactory answers to these questions, so he kept his mouth shut. Captain Righteous looked to be as surprised as anyone, but spent less time asking questions and more time seizing an opportunity. He hopped off the back of the wagon and reached Julian before anyone had time to react. He unsheathed his own sword from Julian's scabbard and placed a boot firmly on Julian's back.
"Nobody move!" said the captain, placing the tip of his sword against the back of Julian's neck. "Or you'll have another head to play with!"
Tim punched Chaz in the shin until he woke up. When Chaz was able to fully appreciate the situation, he kicked Cooper in the back several times before he woke up as well. Catherine stood up and drew her sickle, but dared not move forward. Her wolf barked and growled, but Catherine ordered him to stay back. Greeley and Shorty sat perfectly still, no doubt contemplating what the best means of escape would be. Tim stood up with his hands raised.
"I'm warning you, halfling,"
shouted the captain, his foot heavy upon Julian's back.
"Stay where you are."
"If you hurt him,"
Cooper shouted,
"I'll rip your fucking—"
"Cooper!" hissed Tim. "Shut up!"
"Don't tell me to shut up,"
Cooper said.
"I've had it with this pacifist bullshit. That's my friend he's got over there."
"I've got an idea,"
Tim whispered. Cooper checked his anger.
"Is it a good one?"
"Nope."
"All right,"
said Cooper.
"Run with it, dude."
Tim turned back to face the captain.
"I'm coming out," he said, "alone and unarmed."
"Stay where you are,"
shouted the captain, but too late. Tim had already hopped off the back of the wagon.
"Catherine," said Tim.
Catherine refused to take her glare away from the captain's face.
"What?"
she barked back to her brother.
"Take Buttercup and go back to Butterbean."
"Whatever. Take your wolf and go back to the wagon."
"I'm not leaving you alone with him."
"You don't have to get in the wagon," said Tim. "Just back off and give us some room to breathe."
He looked at Captain Righteous.
"And talk."
Catherine didn't move.
"Catherine,"
Tim pleaded,
"I'm going to try to negotiate a safe passage home."
Catherine turned around to look at him.
"Real home," Tim said.
"If your home is located in the deepest pits of the abyss," bellowed the captain, "then rest assured you'll return there soon enough."
Shut up,
Tim and Catherine said simultaneously. Much to Dave's surprise, the captain shut up.
"Come on, Cat,"
said Tim.
"If things go badly, you can always summon a whole pack of wolves to rip that fucker to pieces."
He made no effort to hide the message from the captain. Catherine backed up, beckoning Butterbean to follow her. Tim stepped forward.
"What's your endgame here, Captain?"
"I will bring this murderous band of thieves to justice."
"You're outnumbered 8-1,
observed Tim.
"And that's not counting a wolf and a..."
He lowered his head.
A bird.
8-1, is it? The captain sneered. Do you include the wizard under the heel of my boot, who I could...
Sorcerer!
Julian struggled to say, with his face pressed in the dirt.
Fine, said the captain. The sorcerer, whose head I can sever with a single thrust. Do you include yourself, the unarmed halfling standing right in front of me, who I could disembowel from where I stand?
All right, fine, Tim conceded. But still, the captain carried on.
How about the little goblin and the ancient old man? Do you expect them to fight alongside you?
Tim didn't respond.
Let's see how loyal your new friends are, said the captain. Shorty! Greeley!
The goblin and the old man shifted in their seats uncomfortably. Shorty cleared his throat.
Yes?
I grant you your freedom. Go now, and you shall never be pursued.
Shorty and Greeley looked at one another.
Thanks, said Shorty.
He and Greeley hopped down from the side of the wagon.
Good luck, guys. I think I speak for the both of us when I say we've enjoyed the time we've spent with you, and we wish you all the best in your future endeavors.
He looked at Greeley for confirmation. Greeley nodded.
Indeed, he said, and then turned to the captain. So long, Captain. All the best to you as well.
He and Shorty walked away, not on the road, but rather into the grasslands off to the side of it.
So, said Captain Righteous, how do you like my odds now?
Tim shrugged.
Still not so good. Yeah, you might take down a few of us, but you'll never take us all down.
Do you see this armor I'm wearing? Asked the captain.
The sneer was gone from his face, and the contempt had left his voice. The sunlight shone off the armor so brightly that Dave had to squint in order to look directly at it.
Yeah, said Tim. I've noticed it.
This isn't your typical soldier's standard-issue suit of armor, you know.
No, agreed Tim. I wouldn't think so.
This armor was passed down to me by my late father, said the captain. It's been in my family for 7 generations. I have no sons.
Why not?
Haven't had time. Haven't met the right girl. You know.
I'm sure she's out there, said Tim. You're a good enough looking guy. Gainfully employed. Have you met my sister?
The point, interrupted the captain, is that I would rather die by the hands of my enemies than dishonor my family line by letting a murderer escape justice under my watch. This is the armor I choose to die in.
Seriously? Said Tim. You're going to talk to me about honor right after you tell me about how you're going to cut my helpless friend's head off and disembowel me while I'm unarmed?
It is unfortunate that...
And what about the dishonor to your family line by letting a murderer escape? Cooper's the one you want. As many of us as you kill, Cooper will surely be the last one to fall. You'll still be letting a murderer escape under your watch.
But I will have died in my attempt to uphold the law, and there is honor in that.
What if we give you the chance to go mano a mano with Cooper? His axe against your sword.
Sure, the sneer returned to the captain's face. And the rest of you lot will just sit back and watch while I cut down your friend, right? Forgive me if I don't trust a group of criminals to not stab me in the back. No, I think I'm going to decline your offer. I think I'll be able to take out at least 4 or 5 of you before you kill me. If the big guy remains standing, he's dumb enough so that he'll be easily captured later without all of his little friends to help keep him out of trouble.
Tim, said Dave.
Not now, Dave,
Tim shouted back at him.
I think you ought to see this, Dave insisted.
Tim whipped his head around.
What?
He ran around to the front of the wagon to get a better view of what Dave was looking at. Dave knew it was coming. He'd seen this cloud of dust once before. He'd felt these same tremors, horses, and lots of them. Tim ran back to face Captain Righteous.
You talked a big game, he said, but you haven't done anything. If you're going to die in a blaze of honor and glory, why haven't you started killing us yet? Why have we been standing around talking?
The captain smiled down at Tim.
You are the one who wanted to talk.
You've just been stalling, haven't you? Demanded Tim. Those are reinforcements coming, aren't they?
How do you like my odds now, little man?
For such an honorable man, you sure are a sneaky motherfucker.
And for such a sneaky rogue, you sure are a dumb motherfucker,
the captain retorted.
Listen, shitbag, Tim shouted, taking a step forward.
He stopped suddenly, his crossed eyes fixed on the end of the captain's sword at his nose. The thundering sound of horses in the distance drew nearer. Whoever was coming was doing so in a hurry.
"It matters not to me," said the captain, looking down the length of his sword blade at Tim, "whether you die here by my sword or die tomorrow morning at the end of a rope. Who knows? You may even concoct some sort of brilliant escape plan during the night."
Tim took a step back. Captain Righteous laughed.
"I wouldn't count on it, though. The prisons in Cardinia are far more secure than the little dungeon in Algor, and they are much more accustomed to dealing with prisoners with all of your different skill sets."
"I want to talk to Mordred," Tim said coolly.
"Who is Mordred?"
"You know damn well who he is."
The captain furrowed his brow in confusion.
"I honestly have no idea who you're talking about. If this is some sort of last-minute trick, I can assure you that you're far too late."
"I know you're in there, you fat shit bucket," Tim shouted.
"I beg your pardon,"
the captain was taken aback.
"I understand you're upset, but I don't have an ounce of fat on my—"
"Are you having fun in there?"
Tim continued shouting.
"While we're all struggling for our lives, you're sitting in my restaurant."
"You've gone mad!"
"Drinking my beer, eating my popsicles, and jerking off to my sister!"
"Ew, Tim," said Catherine. "Please don't give him any ideas." Captain Righteous cocked one eyebrow.
"Popsicles?"
Tim didn't seem to hear any of it. He just kept on shouting.
"You think you're so great and powerful with your magic dice and your shitty car and that stupid fucking velvet curtain that you wear on your back and—"
Anything else he said after that was drowned by the din of hooves pounding the ground around them. Chapter 21. Tim's whirlwind of verbal abuse was drowned out by the stampede of horses surrounding him from all sides. His shouting degenerated into a mindless string of obscenities that even he couldn't hear anymore. Captain Righteous removed his foot from Julian's back and lowered his sword. Tim took the opportunity to breathe.
"Ho!"
shouted the commanding officer, raising his right arm and bringing his horse to a stop. The rest of the horses stopped as well, forming what looked to be an impenetrable circle around the wagon. This was no band of lowly, first-level throwaway guards. These were fully fleshed-out, multi-level characters that Mordred had obviously put some time into preparing. No amount of Cooper's rage, Julian's sorcery, Catherine's summonations, Dave's healing, Chaz's music, or Tim's slipperiness was going to get them out of this one. The commanding officer removed his helmet, revealing a full head of gray hair and a luxuriously long mustache to match.
"Captain Righteous Justificus Blade Master," he said, smiling down at the captain. "It's been too long."
Captain Righteous got down on one knee and touched his forehead to the hilt of his sword.
"Major Portheous," he said solemnly, "it is a great honor to be able to serve you again." "Stand up, man,"
the major commanded cheerfully. Captain Righteous jumped to his feet.
"So what do you have for me here today? A rowdy-looking bunch they look to be." "That they are, sir."
The major scrutinized the group.
"An unusual mix of comrades as well."
He shrugged.
"So, what are the charges you have against these, prisoners?" "First and foremost, the cold-blooded murder of one of my men, sir. There is also theft, breaking into the manor of Lord—" "One at a time, Captain," said the major. "Let's start with the murder. My sources tell me you have some pretty damning evidence to support this allegation. In addition to the dozens of eyewitnesses I can provide, you'll find the head of the victim in the half-orc's bag."
The major raised his eyebrows, and there was a rumbling murmur from the rest of the soldiers.
"Henderson!"
Major Portheous called out.
"Sir! Kindly fetch the half-orc's bag, would you?" "Right away, sir."
The major looked at Cooper, who was shifting in his seat, unsure of what to do.
"Easy there, big fella. Don't put yourself in any more trouble than you're already in. You'll get your chance to speak."
Cooper looked at Tim. Tim nodded. Cooper reluctantly released his bag to the soldier that had ridden up to retrieve it.
"Orc scum,"
Henderson muttered as he took the bag from Cooper.
"I covered your mother in orc scum last night."
Despite the gravity of the situation, Chaz and Dave snorted.
"Nice one, Coop,"
said Dave when he got himself under control.
I don't get it, said Catherine. Orc scum? What's so funny about... Wait a second, or... You guys are fucking gross.
A few chuckles echoed from within the helmets of some of the soldiers situated near Henderson.
Why, you filthy son of a whore! Shouted Henderson, drawing his sword. Henderson! Shouted Major Portheous. Put your sword away! Open the bag and let's see what we've got!
He backed up his horse and muttered under his breath to the soldier next to him.
Orcs come! It was pretty funny!
Yes, sir, the soldier responded. Absolutely hilarious, sir! The major flinched and then exchanged an awkward glance with Henderson, who looked devastated even with the visor of his helmet down.
Go on, said the major, casting an annoyed glance at the soldier next to him. What's in the bag?
Yow, said Henderson. It's a head, all right.
He grabbed the head by the hair and held it up above his head for everyone to see. The air was suddenly filled with echoing gasps, swears, curses, and angry grumbles.
Silence! Shouted Major Portheous. Stand up and be judged, half-orc.
Cooper stood up.
State your name.
Donald McKinley Cooper.
There was another brief period of murmuring from the crowd on horseback.
That, said the major, doesn't sound very orcish.
It's not, said Cooper.
The major shrugged.
All right then, Mr. Cooper, what have you got to say for yourself?
Yesterday,
Cooper began,
I couldn't even afford a night's lodging.
Tim and his friends exchanged confused looks. Captain Righteous wouldn't have known what Cooper was leading up to any better than the rest of them, but the look on his face suggested that he knew it was bullshit.
Major Portheous, he interrupted. It's obvious that he's quiet, Captain, said the major politely but firmly. I would hear what the accused has to say before I pass my judgment. Go on, Mr. Cooper.
Cooper continued his story.
I had only one silver piece to my name, and I spent it.
He paused, raising his eyes to face the major.
I'm not sure I understand, said Major Portheous. Are you saying that you blame society or something for your decision to commit murder?
Not at all,
said Cooper earnestly.
I'm just saying that I think Henderson's mom owes me some change.
The entire contingent of soldiers roared in laughter. Dave wiped tears from his eyes and fell backwards off the side of the cart, and then continued laughing. Major Portheous punched the arm of the soldier next to him and laughed so hard that he started coughing violently and went red in the face. The only two people who weren't laughing were Captain Righteous, who stood in place stoically, waiting for the laughter to die down, and Henderson, who was shaking and nearly boiling in his armor. His knuckles were white around the hilt of his sword. After a few minutes had passed, Major Portheous collected himself, wiped a tear from each eye, and suppressed the tiny fit of giggles still bubbling to the surface.
Whew, he said. I haven't laughed that hard in years.
He brushed his gray hair back from where it had fallen over his eye.
But the time for laughter is finished. It is my judgment that the accused, Mr. Donald McCartney...
McKinley,
Cooper corrected him.
McKinley Cooper is to be executed here and now by Henderson's sword.
He looked at Henderson, eyebrows raised. Henderson dropped to one knee.
Thank you, sir. Right away, sir. Round the rest of them up, the major said casually. They can stand trial and be hanged tomorrow morning.
What?
Shrieked Catherine.
Sorry, dear, said the major. Can't afford to make exceptions. You fell in with a bad crowd. There are penalties for murder in this realm.
Two of the soldiers dismounted and brought Dave to his feet. Cooper stood tall in the middle of the wagon, staring the soldiers one by one in the eye, as if daring each to be the first one to try and grab him. Chaz stood back to back with Cooper, but there was no defiance in his face. He cradled his loot in his arms as if he were trying to hide behind it. As a last-ditch effort, he plucked at the strings with trembling hands.
Sleep, baby, sleep,
he sang weakly at the helmeted faces moving slowly and cautiously toward him.
Your father tends the sheep.
Cooper collapsed in a heap behind him.
Fuck.
Thank you, Bard,
said Henderson. He pulled the loot out of Chaz's hands and threw it on the ground. It took three soldiers to haul Cooper's sleeping body off of the cart. They placed him on the ground as gently as they could to avoid waking him up. Tim, Catherine, Julian, and Dave were rounded up easily, with Butterbean being spared on the condition that Catherine order him to keep his distance from the soldiers.
"Make it quick, Henderson," said the major.
Henderson walked over to Cooper and drew his sword.
"Tim," whispered Catherine, "do something."
Tim looked up at Catherine helplessly. What could he do? Catherine looked down at him with tears welling up in her eyes.
"Wait," shouted Tim. "Cooper is innocent, and I can prove it."
Major Portheous sighed. Henderson, who had already begun to raise his sword, looked to his commanding officer for instruction. The major waved him down.
"This had better be good, halfling."
Tim scrambled around in his mind for something to say. Not the right words, necessarily, as he didn't think those actually existed. Just any words would do now. He turned to Captain Righteous.
"Do you remember the first time you saw me?"
"I remember,"
said the captain, in a tone of voice that suggested that he was only going to put up with a very small amount of this nonsense.
"Do you remember what I had with me when you caught me?"
"You had some small weapons," said the captain impatiently. "A bow and a knife or something. What of it?"
"That's right," said Tim.
He paused and looked around, making sure he had everyone's full attention.
"But what didn't I have?"
"A week left to live."
The major chuckled, as did his men. Even Henderson joined in this time.
"That's yet to be seen," said Tim. "But that's not the point I was trying to make."
"I do hope you intend to share that with us very shortly," said the major.
"Of course, sir," said Tim. "Your majorness, or your majesty, or your majority."
The major sighed again and folded his arms.
"Ravenous,"
Tim shouted. Ravenous, who had been hiding under the canvas, scooted out, stood up, and flew to perch on the edge of the wagon near Tim.
"There,"
said Tim triumphantly.
"You see?"
"I see a bird,"
said the major.
"What about it?"
"Well," said Tim, "first of all, look how big it is."
He glanced over at his friends and his sister. They were all staring back at him with wide-eyed disbelief.
"What are you doing?"
Catherine mouthed.
"This is nonsense," said Captain Righteous. "He's stalling for time." "Time for what?"
asked the major.
"Yeah," said Tim. "What could I possibly hope to accomplish by buying a few more seconds?"
"He's a sneaky one, sir," the captain warned.
The major looked down at Tim.
"If you have a point, make it now," he demanded. "Otherwise, stand aside and let me... Wait, what's this?"
His eyes went wide. He dismounted his horse and approached Tim.
"You little shit!"
The soldiers looked at one another. Captain Righteous stepped back, momentarily confused. He cleared his throat.
Sir?
Tim heard something behind him that might have been a small explosion an instant before Major Portheous snapped his fingers. Startled, he whirled around to investigate the noise. The whole world had become silent and still. Cooper's eyes were clenched shut, and his cheeks bellowed out like ship sails. In front of his face was a frozen mist of snot and spittle. Two balls of snot hung still in the air like a photograph of twin comets racing through an asteroid field. Tim scanned the crowd. No one moved, not even so much as a breath. Not a single blade of grass betrayed the slightest hint of a breeze.
"I suppose you think you're pretty clever,"
said Major Portheous. Tim turned back around. Time, apparently, hadn't stopped for him or the major. It could only mean one thing. Tim swallowed.
"Not really," he said. "You kind of gave yourself away stepping out of character like that."
"That's not what I'm talking about,"
said the major, scowling.
"Then what are you talking about?"
asked Tim, feigning innocence.
"I'm locked in the goddamn freezer."
"Oh, right," said Tim. "Then I'd like to change my answer to yes. Yes, I do think I'm pretty clever."
"Fine," said Mordred. "Ha ha. You had your little joke. Now tell me how to get out of here."
"Wow," said Tim.
"What?"
"Who's living in a fantasy world now?"
asked Tim, walking away to examine a butterfly. The major followed him.
"What do you mean?"
Tim got down on his hands and knees. He blew softly against the butterfly, but it didn't stir. He looked up into the major's face.
"Do you really expect me to help you murder my friends? You seriously believe that I'm just going to let you out of the freezer and trust you to be a decent guy?
This is what you call leverage.
The major's face grew livid. Impotence and hatred shone out of eyes that were unmistakably Mordred's. Tim tightened his lips to a position just short of a smile.
Here's the deal, said Mordred. You and I both know there's a poorly designed handle around here somewhere that I just can't see because it's dark. But I'm feeling around, and I'm eventually going to find it. If I find it before you tell me how to get out of here, I'm going to kill all of you, and it's not going to be quick and painless either.
Tim yawned.
I'll wait.
Fine, said Mordred.
Tim crossed his arms and tapped a foot for a few seconds, and then felt his jaw slacken. The red rage flowed out of the major's face. His skin turned pale, almost gray. Dark circles formed under suddenly heavy eyelids. He looked tired and haggard, and was shivering in spite of the warm sunshine.
I've been at it for hours, said the major through chattering teeth. I can't find the latch.
Seriously? Said Tim. Hours? How can it have been hours?
Mordred sighed.
Time passes differently here. I paused the game, so it's only been a second for you. I'm fucking freezing, man. Please let me out of here.
Did you at least find the popsicles?
Fuck you!
Tim laughed shallowly.
You know my biggest regret? I won't be around to see your obituary. Fat nerd dies alone in chicken freezer.
You're really going to let me freeze to death?
Asked Mordred.
That's really the sort of person you are?
Tim frowned and gazed into the distance. Then he turned back to face Mordred and sighed.
No, Mordred, he said. I'm not going to let you freeze to death.
So there's a way out of here?
Hope sprang into Mordred's voice, though his teeth still chattered.
Oh, yeah, said Tim. Piece of piss, no problem.
He turned around and started walking back towards his friends.
Where are you going?
Asked Mordred.
I'm going to go watch all my friends get killed. You coming?
Do you think I'm fucking around?
The major shrieked at him.
I will murder every last fucking one of you.
Tim stumbled to a stop and turned around.
I swear to God, Mordred, the first one of them that you lay a finger on is the deal breaker.
The major slumped towards him and dropped to his knees.
Come on, he pleaded. You said you weren't going to let me freeze to death.
And I won't, said Tim. It's barely below freezing in there. You're much more likely to die of dehydration or asphyxiation.
And you're just going to let that happen? Yeah, you're a real fucking hero.
I saw on TV once that you can drink your own piss. I think it was on the Discovery Channel.
Come on, man! I'm begging you!
Tim waved to his friends and shouted,
Sorry, guys! Looks like we're all going to die!
The major grabbed Tim by the shoulder and spun him around.
If I spare you and your friends, will you tell me how to get out of the freezer?
Absolutely, said Tim.
He gave the major a cheeky grin. Major Portheus and Tim returned to where they had been standing when time had stopped. Any slight deviation from their original postures went unnoticed when the major snapped his fingers, as everyone's attention was briefly diverted by Cooper's sneeze.
Is everything okay, sir?
Asked Captain Righteous.
Everything is fine, Captain. Don't worry about a thing.
He cleared his throat and commanded silence before addressing his men.
It is my order that these prisoners be released immediately and unmolested, and that all charges against them be dropped and forgotten.
A loud murmur rolled through the crowd. Once again, Tim's group of friends looked at him in astonishment. He winked back at them. Henderson removed his helmet and threw it on the ground.
What is the meaning of this? He demanded.
Begging your pardon, sir, said Captain Righteous, but I must agree with young Henderson. This is most irregular.
A murmur of approval echoed out from the soldiers at the captain's words. Major Portheus shifted on his feet and lowered his head.
I find there is, insufficient evidence to warrant further prosecutory action.
Henderson shoved his sword into the ground and picked up the severed head. He raised it once again above his head.
How's this for sufficient evidence? He shouted.
The major glared down at Tim. Tim shrugged. The major sighed.
Let's ask him what he thinks, he said, pointing to the head in Henderson's hand.
The head came to life.
I'm, in a better place now. I don't wish to press charges.
Henderson screamed and threw the head away as if it was suddenly on fire.
Fuck this,
came a voice from within one of the helmets. He He was easily identifiable afterward, as he was the one on the horse galloping away. A few more followed after him.
Deserters!
Captain Righteous shouted, moving as if to go after them. Major Portheous put a calming hand on him.
Let them go. It's been a rough day. They'll come back around.
Sir,
said the captain with some hesitation in his voice.
I know it's not my place to question your judgment, but I...
You are correct, said the major sternly. It is not your place.
Captain Righteous shut his mouth.
However, said the major, if you will join me for a very, very strong drink, I will explain everything. I could use a man like you under my direct command.
Of course, sir, as you wish.
Come on, men, the major called out. Let's head back to town. Drinks are on me tonight.
The captain was met with a series of shrugs and contented murmurs. One soldier, however, would not be subdued with the promise of free liquor.
Major, sir,
shouted Henderson in a decidedly defiant tone of voice.
Yes, Henderson, what is it? This barbarian monster has besmirched the honor of my mother. I cannot let that go unavenged. I demand his ugly head.
Major Portheous looked down at Tim. Tim shook his head.
How about, said the major slowly and thoughtfully, how about I promote you to the rank of captain?
Henderson's jaw and shoulders dropped.
What? Really? You did well today, son. I see a lot of potential in you.
Okay,
said Henderson, walking away from Cooper, who was still asleep on the ground.
That'll do. I hear there's an opening in Algor, said the major, looking over at Captain Righteous. Let's get back to town, he said, stepping into his stirrup and mounting his horse. If ever there was a man and a drink who needed to be together.
Chapter 22. Tim slapped Cooper lightly on his huge gray cheek.
Cooper, wake up!
Without waking, Cooper yawned, grabbed Tim one-handed around the waist, and tossed him away as if he were a doll. He turned over, smacked his lips a couple of times, and resumed snoring.
Damn it, Cooper, wake up!
Said Tim, rising to his feet and dusting himself off. He stomped back toward Cooper and gave him a swift kick in the ass.
Hey, fuck off,
Cooper barked.
Can't a guy get any sleep? Show some fucking consideration.
He sat up, eyes wide open.
Hey, where'd all the soldiers go?
He looked around.
Why are we all dead?
I think I may have just bought us a ticket home, said Tim.
Everyone gathered around Tim, speaking at once.
What?
How?
What happened back there?
Tim picked up the severed head and placed it on the back end of the wagon, where it was low enough for him to reach.
Hey, Mordred, you in there? How are you feeling?
The head came wearily to life.
Cold, it said.
Cold?
Said Cooper.
It's in the middle of summer, and you're on the Gulf of fucking Mexico. How could you possibly be cold?
You sneaky son of a bitch, said Dave, laughing and punching Tim in the arm. Popsicles indeed.
One by one, the light of understanding shone on everyone's faces. Everyone, that is, except for Chaz.
What the hell are you guys talking about? What do popsicles have to do with anything?
Dave answered.
Tim lured Mordred into the freezer by mentioning he had popsicles in there.
Chaz looked less than satisfied with this explanation, so Dave continued.
The freezer door only opens from the outside.
He's locked in the chicken freezer?
Yep, said Tim. The indoor latch is broken.
Major safety hazard.
Wait a second, said Mordred. If the latch is broken, didn't you say getting me out of here would be a piece of shit?
Piece of piss, corrected Tim.
That means it's easy, right?
Incredibly easy.
So what do I do?
Bring us home, and I'll open the door.
The head on the wagon closed its eyes.
I can't bring you back.
Look, said Tim testily. I appreciate your dedication to the game, but it's time to concede defeat.
No, said Mordred. I mean, I really can't. Not without the dice.
What dice? Asked Catherine. What's he talking about? The dice he used to send us here, said Tim. Wait, you did roll a die, didn't you?
No, I didn't roll any fucking die. He threw a rock at me and I threw it back at him.
Tim rolled his eyes.
Did the rock have 20 sides?
How should I know? I didn't stop to count them.
Excuse me,
the head on the wagon shouted, silencing everyone else.
The dice are on the table up front. I can't get to them from here, and I can't get you back home until I get those dice. Think of another way.
Dude,
said Cooper.
Sounds like you're fucked.
Tim,
the head pleaded.
I swear my mother's soul, man. If you tell me where the latch is, I promise to bring you and your friends back here right away.
It's not a question of whether or not I believe you, said Tim. I don't, incidentally. But I'm being perfectly honest with you. There's no latch. It's broken. Maybe a customer will come in tomorrow morning, and you can bang on the door and hope they hear you.
Mordred sighed through chattering teeth.
I locked the front door.
Well, said Tim, then it looks like Cooper's pretty much spot on. You're fucked.
Come on, man,
the head shouted.
This isn't fucking funny anymore. I'm fucking freezing to death in here. I've learned my lesson. Just let me out.
The pauses in his voice suggested that he was pounding on the freezer door as he shouted those last three words. The head closed its eyes and started crying.
Shit, said Julian. That's a hell of a way to go.
Good for him, said Catherine. The fucker deserves it.
Nobody deserves that, said Julian.
Chaz took Tim by the elbow and nodded his head off to the side. Tim willingly followed him. The rest of the group followed as well.
Dude, said Chaz in a tone just above a whisper. I don't want to come off as, like, insensitive or whatever. But if he dies in that freezer, what's going to happen to us?
We'll definitely lose our business license, said Tim. Nobody laughed.
Honestly, I don't know.
I know, said Catherine.
You know what? Asked Tim.
I know what'll happen when Mordred dies, she said. We'll be stuck here for good.
But if Mordred's not there to run the game, who runs it?
Asked Chaz.
She's right, said Dave. I remember Mordred said something about that in the woods. If he's not around, the game goes on autopilot or something.
That's right,
said Cooper.
I remember. He said he's been the one controlling our encounter so far, which is why we've been fighting leopards and ants and shit. But when he's gone, there's no telling what we'll run into out in the wilderness.
Tim looked around. They were still on the grass near the road and had a wide range of vision in every direction. But forests were visible off in the distance on both sides, and they suddenly looked a lot darker and more uninviting.
Well, then I guess we'd better get out of the wilderness, said Tim.
Come on, guys,
the head on the wagon called out, making everyone jump.
Don't let me die in a freezer. I'm so cold, so fucking cold.
What should we do with him?
Asked Dave. Tim answered.
I don't think we should bring him to... What's the city called? The one we're headed to?
Cardinia, said Julian.
Yeah, I don't think we should bring him there.
But we need him, said Catherine. What if he thinks of a way to bring us back? What if we think of a way to get him out of the freezer?
Fuck getting him out of the freezer,
said Cooper.
If he gets out, he's not going to bring us back.
How do you know? Asked Catherine.
Would you?
Of course I.
I meant if you were him,
said Cooper.
He knows that the second we come back, we're going to beat the shit out of him. Anyway, he's a sad little fuck who gets off on having power over other people. Soon as he got out, he'd just laugh at us and send a bunch of shit out to fight us.
But if it's our only chance to get back home, Catherine argued.
Mordred can talk to us from anywhere and by whatever means he likes, said Tim. Be it a horse, a mosquito, or some random asshole on the street. We've just been given a clean slate with the law of this land, and I don't think it's wise to go marching into one of its largest cities with a severed human head in our bag.
So you just want to leave it here?
We'll bury it. Cooper, can you dig a hole?
Yeah,
said Cooper, his voice uncharacteristically somber.
No problem.
After a few strokes of his axe into the thick green grass, he lifted out a chunk of earth that they could have buried an entire body under. Tim walked over to the head.
Mordred? Moist eyes looked dolefully at him. I'm truly sorry you're going to die in my freezer. I genuinely thought you would be able to bring us back, and that this was the only way to force your hand. You didn't leave me any choice.
He waited for a response, but the head just stared back at him coldly, its teeth chattering.
We're going to bury this head, so it's probably time to find a new conduit if you think of any ideas.
The eyes in the head grew heavy. They lost the coldness in their stare and succumbed to exhaustion.
"I've tried everything," it said, the words broken by a yawn.
"Damn it, Mordred," said Tim. "Did you go away again? How long were you gone?"
"Hours," it said.
The eyes in the head struggled to stay open.
"It's probably sometime in the morning now. It's all over. I'm sorry I put you guys through this."
"Come on, Mordred," said Tim, slapping the head on the cheeks. "Wake up! You know the chicken in there is pre-cooked. I mean, it's frozen and probably tastes pretty shitty, but it's okay to eat."
The head wheezed a hollow laugh.
"I know. I've eaten a box of it already. Not bad."
Catherine started sobbing. She dropped to her knees and buried her face in Butterbean's fur.
"If you run into any of the others," the head said wearily, "let them know I'm sorry too."
"What others?" demanded Tim. "Who are the fucking others?"
"He sent people here before," said Dave. "We can talk about this later. Let's just get this done."
"I'm going to go to sleep now," said Mordred, yawning. "And I don't think I'm ever going to wake up again. Good luck, guys."
The eyelids slowly closed, and the head's breathing became soft and steady. A whirlwind of reality hit Tim all at once. He grabbed the head by the ears and shook it.
"Wake the fuck up, man!" he shouted. "We need you to get us the fuck out of here! We don't fucking belong here!"
Cooper's giant hand gripped Tim's arm, gently but firmly, until he stopped shaking the head. Once again, it was just a cold and lifeless hunk of flesh and a bone.
"Let him go, man. You did the best you could."
With his other hand, he removed the head from Tim's grasp and tossed it unceremoniously into the hole.
"Should we say something?" asked Julian, cradling Ravenous in his arms.
All eyes immediately went to Dave.
"What?" asked Dave, taking a step back. "You're a cleric," said Julian. "Guys, I'm just fucking Dave. I haven't been to fucking seminary. I haven't taken any fucking vows. No, I don't want to say anything."
"Chaz?" said Julian. "A song, maybe?"
"All I've got of me right now is a White Snake song that will help us all fight a little better. I don't know if it's appropriate for this."
"Fine," said Julian. "Let's just cover him up. Coop?"
Cooper covered the hole and patted the earth on top of it. Tim looked up at Cooper with tears in his eyes. His sister's crying had caught hold of him.
"What are we going to do?"
Cooper stood up. He spoke confidently and authoritatively.
"We're going to grab our shit, go into that town, find the nearest tavern, get shit-faced drunk, and then see how things look in the morning."
Tim smiled through his tears and nodded. He looked around. One by one, the rest of the group nodded as well. Catherine wiped the tears from her eyes. The setting sun cast a pink light across the evening sky, dotted with purple, wispy clouds, as the friends walked together in silence toward the city of Cardinia. The End. This has been Critical Failures, written by Robert Bevan, narrated by Jonathan Sleep. Copyright 2012, Robert Bevan. Production copyright 2014 by Saturn 5 Sound.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.